Hey guys, so just quick update before we jump into the episode. For the episode that was going to go out Tuesday at midnight, we lost half of it. So we are going to extend that to the next week.
Yep.
And we were ahead. So you guys are getting an episode that was going to be in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so the confusing part is that the prompt in the episode you'll hear in 2 weeks was for Bella to do a story about a car.
Yes.
And that's the episode you guys are hearing today.
Yeah.
So if you get a little bit confused, that's why. Sorry about that. So after 2 weeks, we should be back on track and ready to go.
Which means in 2 weeks, you'll get the prompt that I gave Ash.
Relationships.
3 weeks?
International story would be in 3 weeks.
Oh, in 3 weeks. Yep. I was saying the one in 2 weeks, you'll get the one that was supposed to come out this week that was about relationships.
Yep. And then 3 weeks will be the one that you hear at the end of this story.
Yes.
The prompt.
Yep.
All right. We figured it out, guys.
We're in this together. Yeah. See ya.
Hey. Now I'm scared Jan's going to stop recording again. We gave him quality content and then we found out he wasn't recording. So we're going to jump in. Before we do, really quick, email us shadowcrime@gmail.com. And don't forget, we are deleting episodes. So go back and listen if you want to. If you want to hear our
bad quality microphones,
how our sound is improved.
Yeah, you can see the glow up. But episodes 1 through 3 currently right now is gone. By the time you listen to this, 4 might be gone. But get to it.
Yep.
All right. So last week, you challenged me to find a story about a car. Which this
I kind of forgot that was my challenge. I'm excited.
The story is not like the car is like the main focus, but there's a car situation in it, so it counts.
Okay, before you start your saga, have you seen the TikTok of the semi truck wheel?
What? No.
It's terrifying, and like I don't know who was recording it, but they're
Wait, are you talking about the car that like flips over the wheel?
Yeah, I saw that. And the person,
the car was just like, whoa! Like I'm like, why are you not freaking out?
Apparently, the person in the car was fine. I don't know how,
but also they like didn't slow down that much. Like they were just like still driving normally.
Yeah, they didn't like. You think maybe someone was like behind
them? Where are they? Where this is happening on a normal basis?
But have you? Okay, so there's a scary movie about a killer tire.
I've heard of this. And it's like rubber or something.
Yes, and this is all I could think of when I saw that TikTok. I was like, this is like the rubber movie happening.
Wait, have you actually watched it?
No.
Oh, me neither. I kind of want to though.
I feel like I would just be so over it.
Yeah, but it's one of those where it's so bad. You just
gotta
laugh about
it. Very intoxicated.
That might be fun though. Make it a drinking game.
Yeah, there you go. All right, sorry for
distracting. All good. So you definitely know about this case. It's huge, like really, really huge. So we are talking about the infamous O.J. Simpson.
Oh, this is going to make me go on a rant.
Okay, but I really, when I chose to pick this story, I actually was like, wait, Ash and I have never talked about this. Like, obviously everyone knows this story, but we've never talked about it. So I've never heard your rant. So it's going to be exciting.
Okay, here we go. Just start from the top with my rant.
And then and then just go with it. Feel free to interrupt anytime you have something that you're annoyed by.
Do I ever hesitate to interrupt
will
you?
Will be very often with the story. Okay, so O.J. Simpson or Orenthal James Simpson, which is a very interesting first name. Don't know where that's from. Never heard of that. It sounds like a toothpaste, Orenthal.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think, wasn't his nickname Oral too, which just weirds me out.
No.
It's an actual name though.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I just think of orange juice. Okay, so O.J. Simpson was born on July 9th of 1947 in San Francisco, California. He grew up really poor, so he was living in the projects with his family in a neighborhood in San Francisco. He was always super athletic, obviously. Mm. People said that he was very well-liked, very much a charmer, but he wasn't so good in school, which is so funny. Every time we start a story with, like, he's very liked, he's a charmer, it's like, you know the kind of guy we're talking about.
Yep. No one saw this coming.
Yep. It's great. And it's like, no one saw this coming, but it's also, like, seeing it now, it's like, yes, we see it coming all the freaking time. This happens
because,
all the time.
Okay, if you look, even watch, like, old footage of him or whatever, he's like charismatic, but you can definitely tell that there's something off. Like, it's not like he's like, oh my gosh, he's the nicest guy in the entire world. You can definitely tell.
I easily saw him like very similar to, I forgot his name. The story that I did about the baseball player. What was his name?
Melvin Hall.
Melvin Hall. Yep. he reminded me of him and his like demeanor and like the way he was.
I only know that because I after that story, I know someone who's a Yankees fan. So every time I see them, I'm like, oh, so no. Melvin Hall.
Did they know about him?
Yes. And they're like, we're not going to talk about that.
Yikes. Oh, man. Okay. So, yeah, he wasn't good at school. His grades weren't terrible, but they definitely weren't good enough to get into any big university. Mm-hmm. So he actually attended a junior college called City College of San Francisco in 1965. I didn't know this, but OJ's father was a well-known drag queen in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
And later in life, he announced that he was gay. He ended up dying of AIDS, and this was very difficult for OJ to deal with. I had no idea. I never knew about his parents. On June 24th, 1967, at age 19, OJ tied the knot. His first wife was named Marguerite L. Whitley, and together they had three children, Arnell, Jason, and Aaron. Unfortunately, in a tragic accident in 1979, OJ lost Aaron in a family pool. OJ and his wife ended up fighting a lot after the death of their son, and they were having lots of other marital issues. So they weren't really working out, and they ended up getting divorced in 1979. Now, obviously, OJ is really known for his athletic ability and his skill when it comes to football. OJ ended up being the star running back for University of South Carolina, and then the Buffalo Bills actually drafted him first round in 1969, which I didn't know what like drafting worked until a couple months ago when Jan explained it to me.
Oh.
So now I understand it a little bit more, but... he had a really good career. He was the second leading rusher in NFL history and was inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1985. Not only was he really athletic and good at football, but his fans were like very strong fans. Like all the women were obsessed with him. He was just that guy. He was pretty good looking. And after he retired from pro football, he really kept up with his fame and fortune by becoming a spokesperson for Hertz rental car company, which is funny because I feel like now if somebody did that, I'd be like, oh, he really went downhill. But apparently back then, like that was like a really big thing for him. Like he really like skyrocketed after
that. Yeah. And I feel like some people do it right. Like you have the, oh shoot. Which Manning brother is it that does the Brad Paisley?
That's true.
Like, I feel like there's like, oh, Peyton. I feel like there's like,
some of
a
them
time
do
where
it,
it like kind of like it's kind of like makes sense.
Yeah, but like for example, Charlie Puth is doing the Subway commercials, and he's talked so much about how he's like, yeah, I'm going pretty downhill, like really fast.
Yeah,
and so some of them, it's like, oh, like you're doing this for extra money, kind of thing.
It's also a weird time right now, because like singers, musicians specifically, can't tour, can't do certain
things.
That's true.
So. Yeah. But yeah, apparently this went really well for him. A lot of people liked him even more because now he was on their TV and like
relatable.
Being silly. Like, yeah. So that went really well for him. He also was an actor for a brief period of time. And OJ always wanted to be famous. Like when he was little, he said, I want to be famous. I want to be known. So that kind of guy. People from his childhood described him as making everything about him, always having to be first and always wanting to win. I imagine like the kid that's like, if I can't win my video games, no one can play.
Like, yeah, like their friends beating them, so they just turn off the Xbox.
Yeah, literally just unplugging it. he loved it when people would take pictures with him and have him sign autographs, obviously. He soaked this all up. Then in 1977, OJ met a girl named Nicole Brown. She was working at a nightclub called Daisy, and this was actually before OJ and his wife were divorced. Though there was an affair going on with Nicole before he ended his marriage with his previous wife, Marguerite. But according to them and everyone around them, it was truly love at first sight. They were head over heels for each other. Which, I don't care. You're still, like, married to your wife. Like,
yeah.
It kind of made it seem like it was like, but it's okay because they were in love with each other. I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe just divorce your wife first.
Though. Right, yeah.
So Nicole was born on May 19th, 1959 in Frankfurt, West Germany. Which I didn't know that either. She was really well liked by her family, and she was described as someone who was very active, very kind, and very down to earth. Nicole was actually only 18 years old when she met OJ at the time, and he was 30 years old. First red flag.
Well, first red flag would be the cheating.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
I would say the Hertz commercials, cheating.
The Hertz commercials.
The age gap.
Oh, no. Nicole actually lived with a roommate. It wasn't anything romantic. She lived with her friend David Lavon. And when she went on a date with OJ, she came back and she said she had a really great night. But David noticed that her pants were ripped. He asked her why her pants were ripped, and she said, well, he was just a little forceful. And David said, are you kidding? Why would you let him do that? David was kind of upset and had told her he wanted to talk to OJ, but she said no because she really thought the date went well and she liked him. Another red flag. This was very concerning to David, but they ended up dating for quite a while, and then they finally got married on February 2nd of 1985. There's lots of videos of their wedding. Looked like a huge, big wedding. Like, nothing crazy happened. It was very soon after that Nicole gave birth to their first daughter, Sydney, on October 17th, 1985. And then she gave birth to their son, Justin, on August 6th of 1988. But after this, they started having more trouble in their marriage. And so Nicole decided to finally file for divorce from OJ in 1992. Now we're going to go to the day of June 12th of 1994, which is when the incident happened. Mm-hmm. That day, Nicole had a pretty average day. She did a little bit of shopping. She got flowers for her daughter, Sydney, because she was having a dance recital that night. The recital actually started at 4:30 p.m. that day, and this was a really big deal to the whole family. And, like, her family was going, OJ's family was going. It was a big thing. OJ arrived late, but he did bring flowers for Sydney, and he said hi to all of Nicole's family. But Nicole completely ignored him. She wanted nothing to do with him, didn't want to be near him, and so he went and sat by himself. There are reports that there was a lot of tension and anger between the two of them that day. When the recital ended at 6:30, Nicole and her family took everyone out for dinner at Mezzaluna. Nicole and her family, the Brown family, made it very clear to OJ that they did not want him to join them for dinner, and he was not welcome to be there.
Shoot.
Imagine how awkward that must be. Around 8 p.m., they finished having dinner and they all went to an ice cream shop to get ice cream for all the kids. Then at around 9:30 p.m., Judith Brown, Nicole's mom, realized that she had left her glasses back at the restaurant. So she called Nicole and then arranged that a man named Ron Goldman, who was a waiter at the restaurant and a personal friend of Nicole's, offered to take the glasses and bring them to her house so that she could get them back to her mother. That was such a run-on sentence, but you get the gist.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. So basically, Ron's bringing the glasses to Nicole so Nicole can bring it to her mom.
Yeah.
Ron Goldman was born in 1968. He grew up in the community of Buffalo Grove, Illinois, near Chicago. And he was also a really well-liked guy, a big family guy. He actually met Nicole about 6 weeks before this when he borrowed her Ferrari, which is like, doesn't seem casual. Like, you don't let somebody borrow your Ferrari unless you're like, I don't know. Like, I feel like there was something going on there.
Well, I feel like at the very least, like, he's super into her.
Yeah.
And she's maybe just wants to drive the Ferrari.
No, she let him borrow Ferrari.
Then, yeah, she's definitely.
Yeah. Like, so I was like, they grew increasingly close, and no one knows if they had any type of romantic relationship. A lot of people suspected that Ron had a crush on Nicole, but they would go out to clubs together, were meeting for coffee and for dinner in the last month or so. But police say it was a platonic relationship. They were just friends, and there's no proving, like, anything more to it.
Maybe he was helping her through all her stuff.
With OJ, you know? Maybe, like, it was, like, a best friend situation.
Or, like, he was just nice to
her. But honestly, if, that. Like, there was anything romantic, like, the fact that they couldn't find anything that could really prove it also just maybe proves that, like, Nicole was probably terrified of OJ ever finding out about them. So it was around 9:50 p.m. when Ron left Mezzaluna with the glasses and headed to Nicole's house. So we're going to pause for a second and talk about what OJ did after the recital. Around 9 o'clock that night, OJ and his friend Brian Cato were at McDonald's for dinner and arrived back at OJ's house around 9:45. Meanwhile, at about 10:55 p.m., a man named Steven Schwab was walking down Dorothy Street when he came to the corner of Dorothy and Bundy Drive. And that is where he saw a dog sitting at the corner. This dog was a large white Akita, and it ended up being Nicole Brown's dog. Multiple neighbors reported hearing a dog barking, likely hers, at around 10:15. Steven ended up bringing this dog to another neighbor's house. His name was Sukru. Sukru says when he got the dog, he saw red spots on him that looked like blood. He started getting concerned, so he let the dog lead him back to Nicole's house, and the dog led him right to two bodies. He says that it was a woman laying face down and there was a lot of blood. So he yelled for his wife to call 911. It was also, which is kind of weird because the guy who took the dog to Sukru didn't see anything.
Yeah, just kind of. Well, I mean, you don't know how. Was it like the dog was out?
I guess he was like, it says that he was on the side of the street. So, yeah, so yeah, that's true.
You don't necessarily investigate. You don't know that that's where the dog came from necessarily.
True. That's true. It was June 13, 1994, minutes after midnight, and he had just discovered Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman in a terrible condition. In a horrible crime scene, laying on the ground, covered in blood, surrounded by blood right in front of Nicole's house. Nicole was found on the steps of her condo with her feet out underneath the wrought iron fence underneath the mailbox, and Ron was found on the ground a couple feet from her in a fetal position. At the scene, there was a black beanie-like cap, the envelope with the glasses that Ron was returning, some bloody boot prints, and most famously, a bloody leather glove. Mm. What was so sad about this is that at the time, the kids were in the condo sleeping, so police had to go in there, get them down, like not through the front.
Try to avoid them.
To the police station. And they had no idea that their mom literally was just murdered outside. Can you imagine being woken up by police as like a nine and what is it? I think it was like 9 and 5 or 9 and 7 year old. And just like being taken like That's by terrifying. The police. It's like you have no idea what's going on. Her family was contacted. Nicole's family was contacted early the next morning. And the family immediately took the kids. That night, OJ had
That's a long time the kids are like... Without any family, just sitting there.
They're sitting at the police station. That night, OJ had gotten on a flight at 11:45 p.m. to go to Chicago. He was actually out there for something related to Hertz, the rental car company. By the time OJ was contacted formally about the death of Nicole, he was already in Chicago, but he voluntarily came right back to L.A. What a good guy. So this is so stupid. So when they called him, you would think if you were told that your ex-wife was murdered, you'd be like, what happened? Like, what's going on? But he literally said, who killed her? Like, what? Like, if anybody called me and any person that I knew, like, if they were dead, like, I wouldn't automatically think it was a homicide. Like,
but it also feels like you know what happened and you're trying to point to, like, oh, who could have done this? Because it's not me.
Literally, to me, that's, like, the number one evidence of, like, literally this just, like, that's the first interaction you have with him. Ugh. So they did an interview with him about 12 hours after the murder. And at this point, OJ was not a suspect. But it wasn't long until detectives started putting the pieces together. The night before, OJ had ordered a limo to come pick him up to go to the airport. And the limo driver said that he was there on time. In fact, a little early, the limo driver was early. And he noticed that there was no cars in the driveway. The house was dark. And at 10:56, the driver said that he saw someone who looked like OJ entering his house. A couple minutes later, around 11 p.m., OJ talks back on the intercom and says, I'm so sorry, I was just taking a shower, but I'll be very quick. Just give me a second and I'll be down. Mm-hmm. He did end up making his flight. At 11:45, he departed Los Angeles for Chicago. So if that was him, it's like he had already arranged for a limo driver to pick him up at that time. But it seemed like he like was running late from something that late and was like showering really quick before leaving, which I mean, I don't know what else you would be doing around that time. I don't know. It's just a little weird. So in the next several days, the media was having a frenzy wondering if OJ was a suspect or not. Police still refused to discuss the case or reports of incriminating evidence that linked OJ to the murders. When the glove was DNA tested, it matched the DNA of OJ, Ron, and Nicole. But no one in the beginning thought that OJ did it. The public loved him. Again, he still had all the crazy fans. And they didn't want to think that he could even be capable of this. It wasn't long before authorities started referring to him as a person of interest, and he really became a suspect when they realized that he had a cut on his hand. But one thing that is very controversial about this, after they were checking out the murder scene, they went directly to OJ's house at 5 a.m., and they said that they were actually going over to his house to inform him that his ex-wife was killed. But the defense used this and said that they went to OJ's house immediately after to try to pin the murder on him. Which, I don't know, like...
I mean, I don't know that it'd be pinning as much as that would definitely be your first suspect.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, and it's like, I think they tried to take it as like they said they were trying to go tell him about his ex-wife. But I feel like it would have been better to just be like, yeah, we're like scoping it out to see where the heck he is.
Well, like, even if you're telling him you want to see his reaction, like that's something you would do.
Your first gut reaction is not like, oh, the police is pinning this on him. When they got to his house, there was a car parked outside, his famous white Bronco. and Detective Furman noticed what he thought was blood above the driver's side handle. After they saw the blood, they were worried that OJ himself was a victim, so they went looking for him. They went inside the property and started knocking on his front door. At 5:50 a.m., Cato, who was OJ's friend and was staying there, opened the door. He told them that when he was lying in the guest house, he was in bed talking to his girlfriend on the phone when he heard these loud thumps on the wall. He said he didn't know if this was a big thing, but he heard these thumps and the picture on the wall moved. He said he thought it was an earthquake and even talked about it with his girlfriend. When police went outside to the wall that was right by the room Cato was staying at, they found another bloody glove. So literally the other half of the bloody glove that they found at the crime scene.
Yeah.
At OJ's house. By 6:30 a.m., several people were there at the house observing this bloody trail that went from OJ's car through his gate, around his house, and up into his house. One of the detectives found 4 to 5 little droplets of blood on the walkway in the foyer of OJ's house, and he found a bloody sock. At that point, OJ Simpson's house was also declared a crime scene, so they cleared everyone from the house and got a search warrant. Like, to me, at this point, it's like... all this blood and random things and you think, nah, he couldn't do it. I don't know. We all know the ending of this story, but it's like...
This is the biggest introduction to how he thinks he's untouchable.
Yeah.
And the world told him he was, basically.
Literally. Like, he had all these people that were fanning.
He didn't even try to cover it up because he knew, like, oh, I'm going to be fine.
Yep. It's so frustrating. So at this point, all the evidence is starting to point back to OJ. There's blood inside his Bronco, on his driveway, in two of his bathrooms, and a bloody sock in his bedroom. And not only that, but the blood on his Bronco matched Ron and Nicole, and the blood on the sock matched Nicole. The bloody glove that they found on the side of his house also had blonde hairs on it. It's just like, what more do you need? Like, you have not only Nicole's blood, which is his ex-wife, but this random dude, Ron. Like, why would he have his blood in his car? Like, why? Like, that's literally all you need. Ugh. Ron Goldman had 24 defense wounds, cut and scratches on his hands. Ron and OJ were exactly the same height, but Ron was 20 years younger than OJ and was also trained in self-defense. So it seems like he put up a fight. You'd expect the murderer to also have cuts and scratches on their hand, but when OJ's body was examined, he only had that one cut on his left hand. Police ended up retracing OJ's... What?
He's like, he's huge and strong. Like, that's not that shocking to me.
Yeah. Police ended up retracing OJ's steps in an attempt to find the murder weapon. They searched the plane that he flew onto Chicago that night, searched his hotel that he had stayed at briefly while he was there. They even looked in the walls of the hotel he had stayed in, but weren't able to find a knife. All of the stuff that police were doing were very obvious. So, like there's so many, like, news media, like, videos of, like, the police are entering the hotel and searching it. So everyone's like, what's going on? Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like a, oh, shoot. Like, he's really, people are actually looking into him. Robert Kardashian, Kris Jenner's ex-husband and father of Kim, Courtney, and Khloe. The Khloe spelled wrong was funny. Was obviously extremely involved in this trial. Not only that, he was one of OJ's best friends, but Kris and Robert hung out with OJ and Nicole all the time.
Yeah, Kendall's. Don't even get me started on Robert Kardashian. I have so much to say about this man.
Kendall's middle name is actually Nicole, so that was a tribute to Nicole.
Yeah, as it should be.
However, Kris and Robert were divorced at this point, so Kris kind of took the side of Nicole's. She was very concerned about her friend, and she had heard Nicole express a time where she was scared for her life. Mm-hmm. This is, like, so frustrating to me. Kris says at one point Nicole told her, quote, he's going to kill me and he's going to get away with it, end quote. Like, I don't know about you, but if, like, you told me that about your husband, I wouldn't just, like, be like, la da 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 da. Like,
yeah,
that's not, like, if that's
There's
your
so
friend.
There's so many things in that situation. And if you're, as far as Robert goes, like, you, from my understanding, everything that I've heard and know about it, he knew his friend did this.
Oh,
and yes. He knew his ex-wife, I guess now at this point, they're separated, whatever. But someone he loves and cares about, that person, their friend is dead, and you're going to choose a person.
Oh, he helped. Absolutely. Get away with
1,000%.
Like,
1,000%. And it's like, how do you live with yourself doing that? Like, I can't.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll talk about Robert. Oh, I put a picture in here, but it's not showing up. Mm-hmm. Robert Kardashian was there the day after the murders at OJ's house. And that day he walked out of OJ's house with a big suitcase, mm-hmm. which actually looked like a garment bag. Like it was really wide. The bag definitely looked like there was something in it. Mm-hmm. Maybe a weapon that OJ may have used, maybe some kind of evidence. They were ordered not to touch that bag, not to take anything out of it, and hand it over directly to the court. But when the bag was given to the court, it was completely empty.
Yeah, so you're just trusting that they're going to do that?
Well, if you see the, like, I don't know why the picture didn't show up, but I'll show you after. There's a picture of him holding the bag coming out of the house. And, like, you can see, like, lines on the bag that's, like, something's weighing it down inside.
Yeah,
like, there's
something in the bag. Of course they're not going to just turn it over. They're going to take whatever out.
There's, like, it seems like there's multiple, like, it looks like a heavy bag. Maybe Jan can pull up the picture. It's so annoying. To this day, no one knows what was inside of that bag. So obviously they wanted to interview Robert about what was in the bag. However, they couldn't because he was O.J. Simpson's defense attorney. And attorney-client privilege blocks them from getting any of that information. On June 16th, 1994, when the time came for the funeral, O.J. was gone.
I feel like there's got to be, and there's not, obviously, because they allowed this to happen, but there should be some standard, like, it's a conflict of interest if that's your friend, like, and you're defending them. Like, you shouldn't be able, because you might be motivated to do things like not turn in information that you normally do, like not do the proper things if that's your friend. And I feel like that should not be allowed.
Well, and I feel like Robert, though, definitely, like, kind of had the same personality as OJ, where he felt like he could just walk into any room and own something. And so I feel like he literally just intruded himself, because there were other, like, defense attorneys that were already, like, helping OJ, but it seemed like Robert was just kind of like, let me get in here, like, let me do my thing.
Yeah.
Which is just annoying. So, when the time came for the funeral, OJ was gone. This is when the search for OJ Simpson started. It was all over the media. Everyone was thinking, if he was innocent, why would he not show up? And then obviously police were even more skeptical, and the search for him began. And at this point, it's like he's all over the news. They were like, there was an interview with Khloe Kardashian, and she was like, I literally remember being 10 years old at school, and like the teachers put on the TV so that we could all watch what was going on. Like, everybody was watching this. At this point, Robert Kardashian actually found a note from OJ. And this is what the note said. And he said this like during a press conference thing. So this was everywhere. Quote, I had nothing to do with Nicole's murder. I loved her. I always have and always will. If we had a problem, it's because I loved her so much. Recently, we came to the understanding that for now, we were not right for each other. At least for now, despite our love, we were different, and that's why we mutually agreed to go our separate ways. It was tough splitting up for a second time, but we both knew it was for the best. Inside, I had no doubt that in the future, we would be close friends or more. I did not plead or contest for any other reason but to protect our privacy, and was advised it would end this press hype. I know you have a job to do, but as a last wish, please, please, please leave my children in peace. My mama taught me to do unto others. I treated people the way I wanted to be treated. All this press talk about a rocky relationship was no more than what every long-term relationship experiences at times.
No, that's not my experience.
I have felt like a battered husband or boyfriend many times.
Oh.
Don't feel sorry for me. I've had a great life, great friends. Please think of the real OJ and not this lost person.
So you play the victim, then you say, don't feel sorry for me.
Thanks for making my life special. I hope I helped yours, end quote.
Yeah. So basically Rob sat down with him and was like, say this, deny everything.
So at this same press conference where Robert read the note, they asked OJ's attorney if there were concerns about OJ being suicidal, obviously because of that note. And he said OJ had been extremely depressed. He had been under doctor's care, medicated and sedated, and he had a very real concern that this might be an avenue that he would choose. But it just seems like they're trying to make people feel bad for him. Even the way that they said it, like, they're all, like, reading it super monotone. And at one point, like, the guy, like, who's asking the questions is like, have you communicated with OJ? And he's like, no. And I'm like, so where are you getting all this information? So at 6:50 p.m. that night, OJ's white Bronco was spotted with OJ inside, and he was on LA Interstate 5. This is where your car thing comes in. This is one of the biggest moments in history. There were so many people glued to their TV watching this. Like, literally kids at school, or their teachers put it on for them. OJ was driving in the car with a gun to his head.
Which is kind of risky because, like, it's live TV, so...
Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, why would you, like, oh. And I can imagine, too, like, for specifically after seeing the interview with Chloe, it's like, she's attached to this somehow. Like, this is weird for her. Yeah. She's, like, a 10-year-old watching this.
I really don't understand the whole, like, teachers putting that kind of stuff on TV. Like, I know 9/11.
Yes, it's like that's a lot of people did that.
Buildings exploding and your kids are just sitting and, like.
Well, at that point, like, teachers are only focused on, like, oh, my gosh, I need to know what's happening. So it's like.
Yeah.
They're not accounting for. Well, that
was there was less technology to get updates. Like that's you could true. Only really do that through TV. So I get it, but it's traumatizing. Just,
yeah, especially for young kids. Dispatchers spoke to OJ in the car, asking him to throw the gun out the window, but he said he couldn't do that. He just asked to let him make it to the house. Meanwhile, there are tons of people lining the streets at this point, which is so frustrating. They're holding up signs. They love OJ, and so most of the signs were supporting him, saying, go OJ, free OJ. You're literally supporting somebody who murdered two people. Like, people on the highway with signs, like, millions of people. Oh, I can't. Because at this point, a lot of the evidence wasn't known. For a while, a lot of people thought that OJ was innocent, even towards the end of the trial. There was many people who believed he was still innocent. This has obviously changed a lot since. Like, then it was...
I mean, you're ignoring facts if you think he's still innocent.
Right now, yeah.
Once you have all the information. Yes.
But then it was like 80-20 people thought he was innocent, mm-hmm. and now it's like almost the opposite.
Because people didn't want to believe that someone that they like looked up to could do that.
Exactly. So he finally got off at Sunset Boulevard and went to his house. The chase lasted over 2 hours. When OJ pulled up to the house...
and that's another thing. Like, if he wasn't rich... and an athlete, they would have caught him. Yep. Like, they wouldn't have just let him.
I do think, though, they were afraid that he was going to, like, if they got too close, he was going to shoot himself and then cause an accident. And like.
But at the end of the day, like, car chases don't work like that where you just let them go where they want to go.
Yeah, very true. So he got to the house, and his son, Jason, who was from his previous marriage, came
you
running
heard the
out.
The theory saying Jason's the one who did it?
I'll get to the theories. he comes out and is yelling at his dad. And then the cops pull him away. And this is where they were finally able to negotiate with OJ. On June 22nd of 1994, OJ was arraigned. Is that how you say that?
Yeah.
Arraigned in the LA Superior Court, where he would wait for his trial to start. He pled not guilty. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's extremely important to note about this case is that at the time, there were a ton of distress with the police already, as there is today, obviously, especially with people of color. So there was just a lot of other stuff going around, like the LA riot had just happened. And so a lot of people were not trusting the police already. So this just kind of mounted on top of that. And people just wanted something else to like hate the police for.
Yeah.
They believe that OJ could have been set up by the police with some type of racial motivation. The majority of people of color at the time, 60%, believed that OJ was innocent. The country was absolutely divided on this case, and the defense really ran with that and made the case that OJ really was set up by the police. They said that the real killer was out there just trying to scare everybody and be like, OJ really didn't do it. One thing that's really weird to know is that underneath Nicole's fingernails, there was DNA of someone who wasn't Ron and wasn't OJ. There are shoe prints at the crime scene that don't match the shoes that OJ was allegedly wearing or Ron's shoes. Allegedly is very strong, because we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. So all of those factors ended up being a huge part of the defense strategy. And this is when a lot of alternative theories started coming up. So here we'll get to some very interesting theories. There's a theory that Bill Wass, who was a drug dealer and criminal from Virginia, he claims that he was offered $1,000 by Robert Kardashian to follow Nicole around and try to spy on her to see if they could find out who she was dating. Side note, Nicole actually did say that she thought she was being spied on. Mm-hmm. In fact, she said she saw someone watching her in her yard at one time. OJ was obsessed with Nicole, and he was very possessive of her. He was very jealous, and Nicole's friends would report that he was controlling of what she would do and would not be surprised if he really did have someone watching Nicole. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all, like based off of his personality. Mm-hmm. So even if it wasn't this guy, like I wouldn't doubt it if OJ had someone do that.
Yeah.
It's even possible that It's even possible that someone who was watching Nicole thought she was in a relationship with her friend Ron. Maybe this was reported back to OJ, and he got so upset that he took care of them both. But Bill also claimed that he was given $18,000 to kill Nicole. Supposedly, he kept all these different notes. Are you
saying that Robert did that?
Robert hired him, yeah.
So they're literally, and this is, they're using this as the, one of their...
Yeah, they're saying that OJ didn't do it.
Pointing to his...
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I mean, all you have to do is divert the attention from your client, so...
Yeah. Supposedly, this guy, Bob, or whatever his name is. What is his name?
Something with a B. Bob?
Yeah, Bill. Okay. Supposedly, Bill kept all these different notes about where she was, what she was doing, who she was with, and he literally had a notebook filled with notes about it. This is a weird thing. OJ actually had a girlfriend at the time named Paula. It wasn't anything serious, but like, it was obvious that they were a thing. And this notebook that was apparently Bill's with all the notes about Nicole was in Paula's car. Handwriting experts have reviewed the notebook and have determined that they think it is Bill's handwriting. It's not 100% proof he did it, but why obviously was he taking notes on Nicole up until she was murdered? Detectives figures this was serious enough to go and interview him.
He was at least like stalking her.
Yes.
For OJ.
For OJ. Literally the notebook is in OJ's girlfriend's car.
Which to me just points more to OJ being controlling, possessive, abusive.
Well, yeah. And regardless if OJ didn't actually physically murder her, he had someone do it. Like this doesn't make him look any better to me. But I think defense was literally just trying to find anything. So detectives figures this was serious enough to go and interview him, Bill. But at the time, so many people were claiming that they did it, which this happens all the time with big cases. And it's so frustrating. It's like you're literally using up the time.
That people, I don't know what that is in people that makes them give false tips or false leads or say that they were
the one who did it. It's just one attention. But it's like people died. Like their families are trying to find justice for these people. And you're in the way of it. Yeah. So because everybody was just kind of like, I did it. They had to take everything Bill said with a grain of salt. Cause they were like, this could just be another one of those people.
Right.
The police could not find any evidence to connect Bill to the death of Nicole or Ron. And at some point Bill started telling investigators he wasn't going to talk anymore unless he got paid. And so they were like, okay, so you're clearly just doing this for, and they were like, all right, at this point, like, we're focusing so much on these like people that are saying this thing and there's no evidence for it. So we're just going to keep moving on with what we actually have. So that's one of the theories. There's also a theory about a man named Glenn Rogers. He claimed at one point that he had killed over 70 women and one of them was Nicole. He said he was painting Nicole's condo when he decided to kill her. The same thing with this theory. There was no evidence to link it up. He actually was like a serial killer at the time around the area. Mm-hmm. And he did actually kill lots of people, but they don't think that he was related to Nicole because he also didn't say anything about Ron. And so,
yeah.
The theory that's probably most well-known, most popular, and has the most evidence behind it is a theory that OJ didn't do it, but his son Jason did it. Police officer Bill Deere claims that Jason was the killer of Nicole. This theory had been widely discredited, but is still very compelling to look at. I think it's just funny.
Yeah, it's BS for sure.
Bill has been, this is another Bill, sorry. This is Bill Deere, who's like another investigator. He's like super passionate about this. He had been fighting for over 20 years to try to get this case reopened. He wants a grand jury to investigate the case because he truly thinks that Jason was a real killer. Basically, he said that Jason decided to kill Run in a cult and that OJ came and tried to cover for his son. And that's why OJ's DNA was at her condo. Jason Simpson was known to have some problems. He was actually on probation for assault with a knife on his former employer. There were also reports that he had assaulted ex-girlfriends in the past. Jason actually had a storage unit, and eventually he stopped paying for it, and so they started auctioning it off to someone. So Bill Deere bought it and ended up getting all the contents of his storage, including weird journals, and they were basically diaries. They had really dark ideas about how depressing his life was, how angry he was. He also talked about killing people who hurt his family. On the day that the murder happened, Jason was actually working at a restaurant called Jackson's. And that night, Nicole was supposed to come to the restaurant after the recital with all of her family, and he was going to cook dinner for them. He was really excited about it. However, the day of the recital, Nicole called him and said that they wouldn't be coming. They said that it was a little too expensive, and so they'd be going to Mezza Luna instead. And people who were working with Jason said that he was really upset. So there's definitely like some little things, but I don't know. I just think there's way too much evidence for OJ than than Jason. Like, I, well, yeah, no, I think I mean, these are just coincidences. Anything
actually tying Jason to the scene of the crime,
which there was none. There was no DNA. There was maybe, no, like, but there was nothing.
It's also like, it's doing that thing again of, well, we tried to go for OJ. It didn't work out. We can't do that again. So let's see if there's exactly. any other thing we can go. Like, I think sometimes investigators get obsessed with like, what other yep. answer could there be? Because we failed, like yeah. not the investigators, but the justice system failed. So mm-hmm. I think that's just what it is.
I think so too. Bill Deere believes that Jason got a knife from his job at the restaurant, went over to Nicole's house, got in some type of disagreement with Nicole, went crazy and hitting her with the blunt head of the knife, knocking her out, and then turning to Ron, who just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and killing him as well. He says that then Jason came out of his rage and realized that he had done something terrible. He thinks that at this point he called OJ, and this is how OJ came to the house and helped his son. OJ actually did hire a lawyer for his son immediately when this whole theory kind of started up. And they also found out that Jason Simpson never got interviewed by the LAPD because he was never considered a suspect for them. They just wanted to talk to him. They asked him several times to talk, and he didn't want to cooperate. But people poked a lot of holes in this theory. Bill thinks that when he committed the murders, Jason called OJ, and that's when OJ put together his outfit with the gloves, and he went back out of his house, crawled over a fence, and that's when he thinks that OJ cut his finger. He then puts his gloves on over the cuts in his Bronco, drives to the corner of Dorothy and Bundy, where he sees two people sitting in blood, and according to Bill's theory, he then pulls off his glove, which opens his cut, and that's when he starts bleeding. And that's how his blood gets to the crime scene. He says that he then jumps back into his car, goes back to his house, drops the glove in the front yard, goes into shower, and then hops in the limo to catch his flight. All of that had to occur in 12 minutes if that theory was correct. It's just funny how much detail they've put in, like he's put into it of like, this is exactly what needed to happen. But it's like, you can't say that's exactly what happened.
Right.
But this guy's very confident about his theory. Other detectives obviously thought that it was crazy that Jason would have more motive than OJ. Right. And so they were kind of like, yeah, this whole Bill guy is just kind of weird.
If OJ was like only good to Nicole.
Yes.
So sweet, whatever. And yes. Jason had kind of sketchy moments.
Then it would be like,
this doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Maybe he snapped, but that's weird. But it's literally like the profile of OJ fits.
And there's happening. So much evidence. Yeah. There's also like, yeah. This Bill guy is crazy, though. He actually dressed up like a doctor for 2 weeks and went undercover in a hospital to get Jason's medical record and prove to the court that he had intermittent rage disorder at the time of the murders. He had stopped taking his antipsychotic medication. This theory has also been widely discredited because Jason's DNA wasn't at the crime scene, obviously. There was so much evidence on OJ that it almost seemed too silly. There were 60 pieces of evidence, including blood samples and a sample of OJ's hair. And it was similar to black curly hairs that were found in the inside of the cap at the murder scene.
Most cases have like one or two.
60 pieces of evidence that ties like it DA, to one person. Yeah.
And that's like the DA is like, okay, like we get like one more and we can take this.
It's so frustrating. Okay, so those are all the theories, obviously. So now going back to OJ. OJ had a really dark side to him, and a lot of people didn't realize this because they were just obsessed with him. But there were several calls that Nicole made where she sounds terrified for her life. You can like find all of these recordings or whatever with her talking to 911 dispatchers, and they're so bad. And there's like so many of them that it's literally the same thing. And you can hear how exhausted she is about literally having to call 911 about this all the time. Yeah. Like she'll call and she's like, he's here again. He broke into the back door. Yeah. And then you hear him like yelling and cursing at her. And then like in the beginning ones, the dispatchers are like, stay on the phone with us until we get someone there. And she's like, I can't, he's going to beat the crap out of me. I have to hang up. But like, it's so sad to hear how monotone and like desensitized it is. She is to it because she like has been dealing with it for so long. It's like, she's almost not freaking out because she's had to live with this for so long.
Well, and she knows that he's protected. Like they're not going to do anything about it.
And there's so many of these calls. Like the video I watched only had about like five, but there were so many of these calls of him literally breaking into her house. Yeah. She said like literally the locks, she's like, I have to get new locks again. Like talking to the dispatcher. I'm like, and she's like, the kids are sleeping upstairs. He's yelling. I don't know what to do. It's just frustrating to see like something happen like that repeatedly and no one's doing anything about it. Like, Yeah. Literally, there's proof. But, yeah. On January 1st of 1989, Nicole called the police. She was found half naked at her house with bruises on her, saying that her husband tried to kill her, which is just another, like, mm-hmm. why is no one doing anything? Her sister, Nicole's sister, had been taking photos of her bruises and storing them. Smart. This had just been going on for so long, but many people in her life and people in the public started to put the picture together that Nicole was a victim of abuse who was covering up for her abuser, as many people in that situation do. Yeah. So, like, you can't
press charges.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And a lot of people were saying, especially her friends, were like, she wanted to, like, keep it together for the kids. Like, she wanted to make it better and fix things.
That's a big person to go up against, because they have, like, a huge following.
Yeah.
And people are going to be mad at you, and people who are a fan of his team. Like, exactly. It's a lot.
And you're technically no one in the public eye without right. him, almost. Like, obviously, we know she's not, but, like, to the public, people are like, who's that?
There's,
you know?
More, there's also more understanding now toward victims. Like, yeah. back then,
yeah,
you don't get a lot of support. So. Mm-hmm.
So there was a potential witness. Her name is Jill Shively, and she said that around 10:45 on the night of the murder, she saw OJ driving like a maniac en route from Bundy Drive to his house, and he seemed so erratic that she decided to get his license plate number to the police. She was very close. She was a couple digits off from his actual license plate, but it's obviously hard to see, and he was driving yeah. so crazy. But if the murders happened around 10:15, OJ would have had time to drive home, shower, get in the limo by 11 o'clock, and head to the airport, which just makes more sense why he was in a rush, like coming right. back and showering and stuff. So the trial began on January 24th of 1995, and this case was named the Trial of the Century because it really captured everyone's attention. The jury consisted of 8 people of color, 1 Hispanic person, 1 white person, and 2 people of mixed race. This was one of the first cases that had cameras in the courtroom because there was so much media attention around it. There was also so much tension over this case because of all the racial stuff going yeah. on. So everybody was torn.
It's a very complex situation.
Yes. So here are some of the key moments of the trial. One of the lead detectives, Mark Furman, was caught saying over 40 racial slurs, and this was on a tape recording that was played during the trial. Not only that, but when he took the stand, they asked him if he had ever used the N-word in a derogatory way or at all, and he said he's never used it before, and anyone who said he has is lying. Right after he said that, they played the yeah. recording, and it's like, oh, dude, like, you literally, oh, such an idiot. But yeah, so obviously that made the police look really bad. Defense really used this as their main point. Then there was the most famous moment of the trial, the moment in which they had OJ put on the gloves they found.
You must acquit.
Yep. He's struggling to put them on, insinuating they don't fit.
This is what makes me so mad, because you can control that. Like, it's your hand. You can literally stiffen your hand. Okay, I'm just going to.
No, that's literally my next point. There's so much controversy because, like, you literally can wiggle your hand in a certain way to make it seem like you're struggling. Like, but also
gloves, like are everybody hard to put on. Does.
Yeah.
But you absolutely, especially with leather gloves, you can position them in a way where it's like, oh, but it doesn't fit.
You
like,
can widen your fingers a little bit. And then, of course, it's not going
to
go through.
If you give me anything to put on, I can pretend like it doesn't fit me.
But like, even if it does fit you accurately, like any gloves, especially leather ones, you have to like wiggle a little bit with any gloves. Yeah. Like, it's not a perfect fit, or else it would come off.
Clench your hand multiple times. Yeah. You get the blood flowing. It expands. Like,
it's so stupid. Yeah. There were even reports that the glove may have been frozen ahead of time, making it shrink and therefore not fitting OJ. His defense team also pointed out there were several issues with the forensic evidence.
It fit enough also for him to cover fingerprints and wear it.
Oh, yeah, like, for sure. Like, he did get it on at the end of it, basically. Like,
so it's like
he made it seem like he didn't, but he did. So he said that the crime scene could have been contaminated and some of the evidence may have been packaged incorrectly. Some of the evidence was left in a van too long and ended up overheating. So literally defense is just trying to take and like literally find anything. This case went on a really long time, and after 9 months and over 100 witnesses, it was finally time for the verdict. It was October 3rd, 1995, and the jury deliberated for less than 4 hours. For such a huge trial, less than 4 hours.
Yeah, that's a lot of information that you're just... That means they all just knew what they were going to do when they went
into
it.
That's so frustrating, though. Like, for such a big case, it's like, dude, just work on it a little bit more. Like, Think about it.
Yeah.
So frustrating. So yeah, verdict came. O.J. Simpson was ruled not guilty for the murder of Nicole and Ronald. People were pretty shocked that O.J. was found innocent. The public's reaction to the verdict was really mixed.
Mixed.
Their families were absolutely devastated, but O.J. was a free man, so he went back to his house. In 1996, Ron Goldman's parents filed a civil action suit against O.J. Simpson in the wrongful death of their son. The trial took place over 4 months in Santa Monica. The jury in the civil trial awarded Brown and Simpson's children, Sydney and Justin, $12.6 million from their father as recipients of their mother's estate.
It's so crazy. I know it's easier to do, but it's crazy to me when somebody wins a case, but then the civil case they lose. Like, that means there was enough evidence. It just falls on the jury.
And there was so much more evidence that was brought up. And I'll talk about one thing that it's like, what? Yeah. Like, why was this not brought up before? Yeah. The victims were awarded $33.5 million, therefore basically finding OJ responsible in the trial.
Yeah.
So remember the bloody footprints at the scene of the murders. Prosecutors at the criminal trial said they were made by size 12 Bruno Mowgli shoes. I think that's how you say it. And there were only 299 pairs sold in the USA. At the trial, OJ says, quote, "If Bruno Mowgli made shoes that look like the shoes they had in court that's involved in this case, I would never worn those ugly shoes," end quote. But then photos surfaced of Simpson wearing Bruno Mowgli shoes 9 months before the murders take place. So there's a video of like him at the deposition, like after they found the pictures, and they like put it in front of him, and like his face is literally like his eyes are so wide, and it's so obvious he's like, shoot, like I messed up. Like, there's so much here, guys. So years down the road, in 2007, OJ became convinced that there were sports memorabilia of his that was stolen from him. And OJ came up with a plan to confront the people who stole it and get it back. He went to these people's hotel room and actually wouldn't let them leave, held them as hostages. And this is where he ended up stealing back his OJ Simpson memorabilia that they stole from him. So obviously he had to go to trial for this as well. And that trial started on September 8th of 2008 in the Nevada District Court. On October 3rd, 2008, OJ Simpson was found guilty on all 12 charges, including kidnapping, robbery.
That's October 3rd dates.
Yeah.
Weird.
He was then sentenced on December 5th, 2008. The judge ordered a maximum sentence of 33 years, which would be 2041 with possible parole after 9 years.
Yeah, they're doing the max because they know that he didn't go away with, for what he should.
Yep. But then in 2017, while he was incarcerated in the Lovelock Law, something like that, correctional center, until October 1st when he was released back into the public. And the man's a free man after murdering two people.
It's so frustrating. And he has his If I Did It book.
So
that literally lays out what he did. And he gets away with writing that and making money off of it because he was acquitted.
Yep. Yeah. That's that.
Yeah. I mean, he did it. We know he did it. I think this is more a case of, regardless of what was going on, it's more a case of his celebrity getting him away with it than anything else.
Which how many times have we seen this happen over and over and over again?
Yeah, athletes. It's just a level of people don't want to believe it because they've grown attached to these people. And you forget about, the victims completely got lost in this.
Yeah.
And it's very sad. But
and it makes it even more, like, it makes it so much worse for OJ and, like, the person that he is. Like, considering that he didn't even try, like, you didn't even clean up the blood. Like, you didn't even try to get away with this. Like, you just kind of knew that you would. And that's just, like, sad. It's sad. But, yeah, he's apparently somewhere in Las Vegas just living a low-key life.
Enjoying life. Yeah. Well, that makes me mad. But that's that.
But there was something about a car in that.
There was. That was a classic car chase.
Yes, that is very true. Well, do you want a theme for your next story?
Sure.
I didn't really think about this, though.
I didn't think about it last time. I just said the first thing.
I got one. Okay, so I want a story that is international.
Okay.
So somewhere not in the U.S.
You're making me pronounce a bunch of things I don't know how to say.
It can be anywhere else in the world. But not in the U.S.
Okay.
Cool. So email us at Shot of Crime. Oh, Jan, you got stuff for us?
But you can still email us.
Yes, email us too. I didn't check the email, but yeah.
We know how Jan, you guys roll.
I think Jan checked it.
It's okay. At this point, it's like a long con or whatever. Like, it's like a joke.
All right, let's get to it.
All right, what you got, Jan?
I've got a lot of stuff.
Ooh.
Okay, so I have stuff that has almost no correlation to the case, and I am starting at the farthest from the case as possible.
Okay, proximity based, got it.
You mentioned Eli Manning, and you...
Peyton, I think, is who I was talking about.
Yeah.
But Eli Manning...
Because Peyton's the one on the commercials.
Yes, you mentioned Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Well, and you, Bella, have mentioned about, like, endorsements. Mm-hmm. Well, Eli Manning... has retired in the last few years.
Yeah.
And he is now the spokesperson for Red Hot, like, the sauce.
Yeah,
like Red Hot.
The hot sauce.
Like the buffalo sauce.
Oh.
And it's funny because, I'll show you guys after, the ad is, like, hilarious. He makes a joke about being, like, he's like, it's not super spicy. It's approachably hot. Like me.
I love, like, self-deprecation.
And then, he gave himself a little bit credit, though. It's like,
yeah, he's like,
he's like, I mean, I'm like,
Red Hot sauce, like their slogan is, I put that on everything.
Yeah.
And he says it. It's so funny. Then he goes, like, Red Hot, I put that on everything. And it's like the funniest thing. I just think it's really funny. Moving over to Peyton Manning. They're both known for doing really funny things. Like,
yeah,
they do, like,
they're
these,
funny.
Like,
oh, I've seen, like, the skits and stuff.
Yes. Peyton Manning has an SNL skit that is absolutely amazing.
Are you talking about the football one?
Yes. It's so good. It's called The United Way.
It's
and it talks
so
about
funny.
How he's, like, you know, pouring into the local youth. And he runs these football camps. And he starts it. And he's like, come on. We got this, guys. Come on. Okay. Check, check, check. You know, check the mic. Check the mic. Just doing stuff like that. And he goes, like, and he, like, steps back. And he just chucks it at this kid's backside. And he, like, doubles over. And he goes, like, my God, you freaking punk. And he just, like, goes off on him. And just, like, cursing these kids out. He, at one point, he tells a kid to just hang out in the porta potty. It's the fun. I'm sorry. It is so funny.
It is funny.
Oh, man.
They're funny. I feel like when you retire from a sport, you have to be that way. Like, yeah. In order to go out cool, you just have to do funny things.
And last thing about Peyton Manning, I have to put this out there. And if this causes us to lose listeners, I'm sorry for rambling on about this. But people might know this guy's name is Pat McAfee, was a punter for the Colts. Where Peyton Manning played for many years.
Right.
Anyways, he retired. Now he's like one of the best. He's one of the top sporting talk guys. Like, he has this crazy big show I watch all the time. Anyways, he tells this crazy story. And he goes, Peyton Manning used to find him so funny that he would just fly him around with him everywhere. And one time they were at a casino.
That's the kind of friend I want to be.
Yeah.
Fly me around everywhere because I'm
He's
funny.
Like, I just you used to take me around to drink beers and tell stories. So that's what I would do.
Oh, my gosh. Like, imagine being that good at telling stories.
That's so good. And then he goes, we were at a casino. And Peyton Manning walks by up to me. He's like, I'm at the roulette table. Peyton's going up to his room, walks by to me, slaps my butt and goes, how about that red 18? And he goes, I had chips on the one, he says, and I'm like, all the different numbers. He goes, so I moved everything onto red 18. And he goes, and everyone on the table was like, oh my God, that's Peyton Manning. And everybody moved it onto red 18 and it hit. And the next day they're flying back and he goes to Peyton. He goes like, hey Peyton, you know, last night when you said red 18, right? He's like, yeah. And he goes, that hit. And he goes, yep. Like dead.
That's
straight.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah. I know. And just like turned around and was like, why is this a conversation? Of course it is.
Of course what I said would be right.
So I aspire to be as cool as
That's amazing.
Anyways, moving on, going back to the case a little bit. I thought this was kind of crazy. In 2019, O.J. Simpson was voted one of the top 100. He was given the award of being listed as an all-team for the NFL, like, all time.
What?
Every so often they put, like, every 25 years they say, oh, this is the best players of all time.
You said in 2018?
In 2019.
What in the
Voted
heck?
By former NFL players and coaches.
Oh, my God.
This is what I'm saying is they can't separate, like, talent from, okay, this person, we just should not, like, include them in stuff like this anymore because they're an awful person.
Like that.
They take the whole stance of
talent, like,
legally,
just pure.
No, legally he was acquitted. And so because legally...
No, but he's done... Here's the thing. He's done whatever you want to say about what he was acquitted from, he's done enough to be like, hey,
even
no.
Even if he had
like,
not murdered anyone, him as a person...
The 911 calls abusive, alone yeah. and the stuff he was arrested for... No. Yeah, no.
It's crazy. He has a Twitter account now, OJ. Ugh. And it's like
so
super
glad
popular.
I'm not on Twitter.
He's followed by like a crap ton of people, but yeah. like his tweets only get a few likes because I think everyone's too scared to like it. But everyone wants to
but
know
you follow
what
he's
him. Posting.
Interesting.
And he posts videos. He doesn't tweet. He posts videos of himself commenting. He comments on the world, and he comments a lot on the internet.
He's such a narcissist.
He literally is like, and he's like in every single video is like him at a golf course. It's crazy. Okay, fun fact about Robert Kardashian. His second wife's name was Jan Ashley.
Oh, shoot.
That's hilarious.
That's weird.
That's all right.
So I have a couple thoughts on the case. Now, these are my opinions, my thoughts.
All of this is our opinions and thoughts.
No, I know, but like, I've been told in the past that I say 100% when it's can't be.
So I just, you 100%.
So if I say 100%, it's 100% my opinion. But anyways, there's
a margin of error in this.
Early on, you said that when he first got a call, yeah. he goes, who killed her?
Yeah.
Now, I was playing devil's advocate on that.
Okay.
Obviously, it paints the picture as he's trying to figure out, like, what do you guys know? Mm-hmm. It could also paint the picture of this guy wants to immediately get revenge on this person. And is like,
yeah, but I think at that point, he didn't know she was...
Yeah.
She was murdered.
No, they did know she was dead, but they didn't know she was murdered.
He didn't know that she was murdered at that point. Like, it could have been an accident. It could have been anything.
I'm just, if someone called me and said somebody was dead, I'm like, did they get in a car accident? Did they get a heart attack? Did they, like, it's like, my mind is never immediately to murder. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just weird.
Yeah.
That's not what you automatically think when someone says, hey, this person died.
If they said, hey, they were found this way. It looked like a murder, and you said who killed her. That would make sense.
Yes, but this was before they said anything.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you did mention that you grew up in the project, so
yeah. You might be more used to like having to think about stuff like that.
That's true. I guess because in my mind, like
different perspective,
that never happens around me, so that's not my first like instinct.
Again. Not saying that is the only thing. That
yeah, no.
Projects, but
I still think
documented.
There's other things. Yeah.
Anyways, what was the next thought? Oh yes. Okay. My whole thought on the prosecution, and this is something that I think this is actually an opinion I have on many people, is if you think you're right, you should not try so hard to prove it.
Yeah.
And it was like it feels like they went so hard when it was like. There was this, they were like, and we got him on this, and we got him on that, and we got, and there was like so many things that in a normal case would have painted him as obviously the killer, that they went too far and they started almost picking anything because they were like, we need to put as much on him as possible. And it was like, the evidence was plain as day.
But
they
there is
kept
like,
it yeah. simple.
There is a sense
I get what
of
you're
though,
saying.
Like, it can be so frustrating that there are so much evidence. It's almost like, okay, guys, like, look at these 60 pieces of evidence. Like, how is this not like?
I think if you're looking at it logically, yes. But if you're talking about jurors, you have to do every, like, the burden of proof is on prosecution. You have to do absolutely everything you can. And you also are answering or deflecting from everything the defense is doing to just try to confuse the jurors. So you can't just be like, here's the evidence. Because also, like, they're not really fully trusting anything the police have found. So you have, like, so many things you're having to work against.
It's also personality, too, because if you gave somebody two or three pieces of evidence that were so clear, some other people could be like, oh, that's not enough. Like, I want more. And then you have, like, it's just, it just depends. Like, my personality, if there's 60 pieces of evidence in front of me, I'm like, how is this not, like, you know? Like, that's plenty of proof.
Like, I think it would be cool to just like deflect the defense and then towards the end just stack it where it's like it's so overwhelming how much proof
how
we
much?
Have
yeah.
not like throughout the entire time but stack it at the end where then the jurors are just like
holy cow,
how can we like even say
fight
anything
that,
other than that because I think when it's just spread throughout
you
it's easy to forget
it.
Things and
that's true.
But I mean, I think the inverse is like Casey Anthony case. They were so confident that they had it that they went for too much and then they didn't have enough like core evidence.
Yes.
They had a lot of like plausibility, but they didn't have a lot of like evidence. And so there was doubt in the jurors and
I agree, which I feel like is the opposite in this case where they had a lot of core evidence.
Yeah. Like, because they tell jurors, like, stuff. If there's any seed of doubt, like, you can't convict this yeah. person. So you have to, it's a lot to try to convince mm-hmm. people.
Well, very interesting discussions. I have a lot of points, fun facts on the car chase.
Ooh.
Okay.
But I'll start off with one time when I was in college, I watched a car chase happen live.
Whoa.
Live?
Yes. And the guy committed suicide.
Oh, no. In the car?
No. He was driving, and it was, like, in Vegas or something, somewhere out where, like, it was the desert. Like, you could get...
So, wait, you're saying you saw it live on TV?
Yeah, I'm thinking you're, like, driving and seeing this in front of your eyes.
No. Okay. Oh, okay. I was like, when did you go to Vegas?
I'm so confused.
Man, like, you guys were, like, so excited about my phone fact. Like, and I was like, yeah, I did. I thought you guys were
No. That's still really, like, crazy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It sucks. I don't
even
feel
like... Wait, when was this?
When was this?
Yeah.
Well, I was in my freshman dorm, so...
Oh.
Fall, probably, of 2012 or spring of 2013.
Aged yourself.
Interesting.
Yes, I'm 27. Just turned 27.
Hey.
But anyways, I remember basically the guy was driving, and then he was on a highway, and then he took a country road, and it was long straight country road, like you've seen mm-hmm. Breaking Bad.
What?
And then
what were you watching it through?
Just the news.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And then I think it was I don't know what news channel I had it on. I think yeah. It was just the first one that all popped
yeah.
up. And I was like, I think, no, I do know. It was Fox News because it was Shepard Smith. I like Shepard Smith. No longer with Fox. Anyways, it's a cool dude.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's just cool dude. He always just
I don't watch
straight,
the news.
The news stresses
shooter.
Me out. I'm just
yeah,
like, no.
I
it's
really
what's funny
it.
Is I love true crime stuff, but the news
it's just the way that yeah, I don't like.
I always liked
either.
Him just because he was never all he did was report the news. He wasn't
straightforward. Yeah.
I'm sure he had some biases, but anyways, I remember he the guy was driving and then he turned down a dirt road and then drove and then kind of hit a ditch and then just jumped out of his car. And then I remember him saying, Shepard Smith was like, hey, guys, let's put a delay on this. And I guess production was late to it or something.
Oh,
and then at one point, he literally pulled a gun out. He looked left, looked right, and then killed himself. I remember I was sitting there, and I was just it was shocking.
Yeah,
in the moment, it was very shocking to see.
Yeah.
Because it was the stuff you see in the movies, be like, oh, my God, that really happened.
It also is different, I feel, in real life than
yeah.
portrayed in movies.
Yeah,
because
that actually happened.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. And so, I remember Shepard Smith was pissed. He was like, did we get it? And he was like, no. And he was like, and we're like, God. And he started cursing and stuff. It was mad. I don't know, maybe didn't curse, but anyways. Okay, back to OJ. The car was not going that fast. The cop was caught. The cop that caught him mm-hmm. was only going 35 miles per hour.
They weren't trying to catch him. They were letting him get
yeah,
to the house.
Yeah, it wasn't that's what I'm saying, though. That's not protocol.
It's not
anyone
a car
else.
Chase.
No, it
everyone
wasn't
calls
like
it
this.
The
like,
OJ car chase. And the pictures show it this crazy thing. But if you watch it, he's going really slow.
Yeah, yeah because
even when he's coming off, there's traffic and you can see him slowing down. They're letting him
crazy.
Do it.
Yeah.
So the other guy that was in the car with him, his best
mm-hmm.
friend.
Mm-hmm. He was actually the owner of the car.
Yeah, yeah. Al Cowlings. He wanted to get, I don't know if you mentioned this. I apologize. I was.
I know. I just didn't add that because it was getting too long.
He wanted to get rid of the car as quickly after. And someone approached him with an offer for $75,000. And he agreed to it, but then backed out when he realized the guy was going to use it to drive people to Nicole Brown's cave. As a gory twist on tourism. He was he was going to sell tourism packages, go visit,
what
Nicole Brown's
heck?
Place. And then you can do ride in the Bronco.
Oh my gosh.
That's so messed up.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah. He was in the car
and people would absolutely do that.
Oh,
that's the...
oh for sure. He talked to the police first and the police were telling him make him stop, do it, make him stop. And he's like, no, just let him get to his parents' house or whatever. He was kind of convincing him, too.
Gilbert, I forgot the whole name, owns the car at this point. He bought it for the same amount of money.
He currently owns it right now?
Still owns it. Has not sold it. Since the incident, the car has only tracked 20 miles.
Interesting. So
the they haven't driven it. It's just been in storage. It's currently sitting in Alcatraz Museum.
Wow.
And here's the thing.
Ooh, weird.
The owner siphoned all the gas out and put that in a safety deposit box.
Whoa.
Because the gas that was in the car for the incident, he owns that. And he's basically saving it all until one day he's gonna sell just cash out.
Yeah, I'm sure someone's gonna want to buy that.
It's crazy.
That's crazy.
The year after the chase or whatever, or drive around
the,
town.
Drive around town.
The leisure. Broncos,
the caravan.
Bronco sales went up 27%.
Oh my god!
Everybody wanted, like,
which so most stupid. Most things you feel like would hurt, like the sale of something.
Anything. That's why they say
crazy.
All publicity is good publicity.
Like that's like when Corona like hit a spike when the virus started. People were buying it.
That's crazy. Last two things on the chase. Ford developed a new Bronco after like 20 years of never developing it, and it released last year. And the initial release date was July 9th, 2020.
His birthday? Oh my gosh.
Which is his birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said, when people pointed out, they were like, Ford has basically on multiple occasions said that that was a
coincidence.
And
oh
I'm like,
my
of course
gosh.
They're going to say that.
But they were like, it was a bad coincidence. They pushed it like a week. It's crazy.
Yikes.
And last thing I'll say, I am thankful for Steadicams. Because if you watch that tape,
it's
on the helicopter, and the
it's
helicopter's
a lot,
like,
yeah.
It's bad. Nowadays you got Steadicams? Nice. Drones.
You got drones.
Last three things I'll say is he should have won an Oscar for that glove thing. He was like,
Yeah, that was.
And then once he put it on, he was like so like just like
yes.
theatrical about
it's
it.
It's crazy. When like he first goes to play
he
it
bothers
on.
Me so much.
Like, he's like, dang it, okay. And he starts putting the glove on. And he goes, and he like literally goes, it doesn't fit. And he's like, it doesn't fit. You can see in his face that he's excited. It doesn't fit. And I'm just like, you're so obvious, dude. It's
he's
crazy.
Very obvious. Even in
so
like when
crazy.
He saw the picture of the shoes, he like widened. Like he widened his
he goes,
eyes
oh,
to
no.
where he's so
oh,
like.
No,
oh
no, they
gosh.
Have my gloves. Oh my god, they don't fit. Why don't they fit? It's
so
crazy.
Stupid.
Also, I will say, I have put on leather gloves in the past. They're not like stretchy.
Right.
So
no,
like,
you have to like.
Yeah,
like,
they're like a
kind
tighter
of like,
fit.
Exactly.
You know, they're supposed to be.
Well, because think about it, if gloves are gonna be like very, it's like a ring. If you put on a ring and it goes immediately on very quickly, it's probably gonna fall off. You want like it's gonna be a snug.
Well,
fit.
Also like depending
yes.
on how much sodium you eat that day, like
oh, yeah.
your hand can expand.
The time
so
of the day,
it's
like.
He was wearing latex gloves.
Yeah, of course
that's
gonna
make
be
it
hard.
So hard.
Well, because they had to, because they didn't want to mess it up or whatever.
For sure, it
but
makes sense.
Think
but
about with any like latex is like that's hard to get anything on top
yes.
of that.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say, he struggled so hard to put that junk on. If you watch the video at the end, they go, "Okay, thanks, Your Honor, whatever." He literally takes the gloves off like it was nothing. And I'm just like, "Okay, I have put stuff on that's tight,
and it's hard to get off.
And it's hard to take
yes.
off." This guy was like, "Ugh, I can't fit it," and then goes, "We're good, okay, done." Like, you're freaking kidding me.
That's hilarious.
It's insane, dude. It's insane. Anyways,
I hate him.
That was all my. I went on this rabbit hole of like, oh. You know, like, in the Bible when it goes, like, this person beget this, that beget that, that mm-hmm. beget this person. I kind of tried to do one of those where it was like, because of this, Robert Kardashian.
Domino
got famous,
effect.
Because of this. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get anywhere. But at one point, I was on Ryan Seacrest. So.
Oh.
So.
All right.
He has nothing to do with it except that
wow.
he
I do know, I don't know what the list is, but there's a ton of cases tied to people born on July 9th.
Oh,
it's like a specific birthday.
I'm born close to that.
Yeah, it's like a specific birthday where there's a ton of people that are tied to that.
I saw this video.
Specifically people that have murdered people.
Mm. Oh, that's nice.
I saw this video that said women who drink Diet Coke are more prone to kill their husbands.
I believe it.
And it's strange. A video of this guy like reading that and then his wife is drinking Diet Coke and he like knocks it out of her hand and he's like, "Don't murder me."
Have you heard the new commercial for Diet Coke?
No.
It's literally like not just your mom's drink.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I did see that.
Okay, if that's
okay,
your ad.
If
like,
you think about it, though, most 40-year-old women, Diet Coke is like their jam.
I know, but that makes me like hate it even more.
Oh, I love
like,
it.
Like, it literally tastes like so fake to me. Oh.
I think regular Coke is too sweet. I can't do it.
Yeah, I feel like Pepsi is too sweet. Too
syrup.
I don't like Pepsi. I like Coke way better.
Yeah, Coke is good. Coke has a nice bite.
I like
to
Dr.
It.
Pepper or Pibex.
Oh yeah,
okay.
I like Dr. Pepper.
Spice.
This is specific. This is a question about Coke for you.
Cocaine?
Yeah, crack or powder. I don't like Coke from a can. It tastes different than bottled.
I agree. The bottle is better.
But it doesn't.
I do think even the plastic, like 2 liter, is better than the can.
My favorite yes. is fountain. Like fountain.
That
fountain
also
Coke
has
is
a
my favorite.
Taste.
I like the glass Mexican Coke. It's
I've
the
never
best
had
to me.
Mexican
yeah, I've
Coke.
Never had that. I heard it's with
it's
cane
really good.
Sugar.
Yeah.
It's really good. in my opinion.
Wow, guys, we really went in a different direction here.
That's true. Anyways.
So, shotofcrime@gmail.com and listen to our old episodes. They gonna be gone.
Yeah, you can send us your like perspective if you think OJ didn't do it.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it.
We're open to possibilities, but like maybe he did it. So
yeah.
All right, see y'all next week. Don't forget, we will be deleting episodes, so go back and listen if you wish. Or just email us what you want us to talk about. What else can they do?
That's it.
Say listen. Hi.
Yeah, you can give us topic ideas. You can say hi. You can tell us about something you've experienced or like your friend, something your that friend. Happened. You can tell us about your friend. I feel like I'm just rambling.
Tell us how your day's going.
Yeah.
Okay. You got any promotions?
Okay. Bye.
Bye, guys.